So you take all that red pepper out. Now, once you get ready to put the tomatoes in, everything must have fallen apart. If you're cooking anything and put tomatoes in it, after that, the acid in the tomato solidifies. A butter bean, a potato will cook mushy, but it'll still look like a chunk of potato once you put that tomato in. And a lot of folks don't know that. I mean, and you'll mess up any recipe that you're cooking if it's supposed to cook down, if it got tomatoes in it, if you put the tomatoes in early.
Okay.
Because there's nothing you're going to do. It will make those potatoes come apart. I mean, you can literally mash every one, but it's an effort. You got to take tweezers.
I'm remembering the last time I made gumbo. Same thing happened.
Tomato in it, that's fine. But you had the rest of the consistency must be like you like it.
Right. Okay.
Now, we used to do canned tomatoes.
Yeah.
I always grow my own. I grow tomatoes purposely, and my mother. Until she's 92 now and she's too old, she can't can tomatoes. But Amy said, look, what we'll do is I'll freeze tomatoes. So she quarters the tomatoes and takes all the seed and the pulp out and squeezes them. And so what we put in is pure tomatoes. It's none of the seeds aren't in there and none of that stuff's in there, which requires a little more water. Usually when you dump in, and it calls for 8 quarts of tomatoes.
Okay.
To start with, it calls, like I told you, calls for a gallon of shell butter beans.
Yeah.
It calls for that meat. That meat adds up to about 22 pounds.
What do you think the proportion there is? How much? Well, I know there's...
Well, seven chickens.
The squirrel don't count. You got seven chickens.
Seven. So you got about 16 pounds, and you got 8 pounds of beef and 8 pounds of pork.
Okay.
So you got about 16. You got 30 pounds of pork and beef in it. Not counting the two squirrels.
Okay.
A gallon of shell butter beans, 10 pounds of potatoes, and that's 10 pounds of peeled potatoes.
Okay.
You can't go to the store anymore and buy 10 pounds of potatoes because one or two of them, you've taken half of them, throw them away, or you throw them all away.
Yeah.
So I got a regular set of scales, and so after I do all of my peeling, I weigh them to be sure I got 10 pounds of peeled potatoes, and a gallon of butter beans costs for 8 quarts. Of tomatoes, and that's 8 quarts of tomatoes. If you're using canned tomatoes, then you got, depending on how thick they are when you, and there is a variety that you can buy that sells a lot of stuff of people making Italian foods.
Right.
You can buy a real nice, I think it on a can, it looks like it came from a Roma tomato because it's almost all tomato. And very little juice.
Right.
You can't buy Hunt's or Libby's stewed tomatoes because it's more water.
Right.
And there's no problem with using that. You just got to be sure that you are seeing enough tomato in there and not a whole lot of liquid.
Okay.
And if that's the case, you got to put in more tomato and you got to cook it longer.
Okay.
So you put the tomatoes in, and I usually let them stay about an hour, and then they cooked all the pieces.
Yeah.
From here on out, you can, everything in it is done. You haven't put the corn in. But you don't put the corn in about 30 minutes before you're going to eat it.
Okay.
That'll just get tough. And that's so tender. I raise my own corn. And I cut that off the cobs before it is just filled out. Or it hadn't quite filled out. And you can buy Mitchell's shoe peg corn.
Never heard of that.
And you got to look to find it, but they still make it. But you're going to have to find it in a store. But that's grade A fancy, white, cut off shoe peg corn. And it's little bitty corn. And if you make a corn pudding, you'd be hard pressed to tell it from homegrown corn. And you never would say this is made out of canned corn.
It says shoe peg on the...
It says Mitchell's. Comes in a white can with green stuff. Says Mitchell's shoe peg corn. The last store I was in, it wasn't about an accident. I was down in Murfreesboro, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I went to the store for the couple that we were visiting. And they had it on the shelf. And she comes to the stew. And I bought 10 cans. I bought it for nothing in the world but backup. And I cured her, and she loves corn pudding and does a lot of cooking. And I said, I'm going to tell you something, Janet. You make a corn pudding with this Mitchell Choupay corn and feed it to your family, and they going to swear it's fresh corn. And you can't.
I'll look for it. I don't know if I really believe you, but I'll look for it.
I'm going to tell you, you can't beat it. And so all that cooked. And then you put in the recipe calls for the corn cut off of 100 ears. Now, when this recipe was written, there wasn't any such thing as Silver Queen and Tender Sweet and all these little bitty things. These were white trucker's favorite ears of corn. And trucker's favorite was a white field corn that if you left out in the field, you could use it for feed for animals.
This was not like a sweet corn kind of thing.
But it's sweet only if you went down there in the field and said, and started finding a year or two every stalk, oh, this stuff is ready. If you went back to the house and said, well, the corn's filling out, I'll get it in 2 or 3 days. When you went that 3 days from now, you can forget it.
So you pick it.
In other words, when it first starts, you get in there and pick it today. It didn't have any holding, wasn't created by any seed company. Like Silver Queen stayed out there for 5-6 days.
Wow.
It gets bigger, but it never does lose that sweetness.
Wow.
And that milk still in it. So it's knowing that. I usually use about 120 ears of corn that we cut off and Amy freezes. And that, it takes 20 years to fill up a quart container. That's a good average. If I cut the corn off 20 years, I got a quart of good corn. And so we put in 5 quarts of corn. So I got the tomatoes. It's 8 quarts of tomatoes, 5 quarts of corn, and I got that ready.
Okay.
And I usually take it out the night before I do the stew and just put it in a cooler. Mm-hmm. And it hadn't completely, the butter beans, and see, we got the butter beans frozen. We got everything frozen now as far as vegetables all ready for it. And I'll buy the potatoes the week of the stew, and I'll get the meat. I'm going to order the meat this afternoon, so be sure.
You grow the butter beans?
No. I go to the farmer's market in Raleigh.
Well,
spring of the year when everybody's got butter beans, and then I pick and I tell the woman or the man, whoever's selling them, I said, I need some real tiny butter beans. And I went over there this year, and a woman had, I bought every one she had. She was shelling.
I love butter beans.
I'm going to tell you right now, to have them right, that tear your fingers all pieces shelling because they hadn't, there's no way they started to fill out. Mm-hmm. And she was sitting there, and she said, my husband and I shelled these butter beans last night. They were just perfect. They went through any shell and they're not bruised. And I said, well, how many you got there? And she says, well, I don't know how many you want. I said, I want every one you got. And she looked at me and she says, well, I've got a few in the cooler. I said, I want every one you got because Amy makes the best succotash. I cut off the corn and she makes corn and butter beans. You don't even have to thicken it with that corn because that corn is cut off, all that stuff is in it. How's everything out there, honey? Everything okay outside? Yeah, other than that. So anyway, we got that. So the corn, everything's frozen, and I just put it in, and when it's time to put it in, sometimes it's semi-frozen, but it doesn't make but a second for it to fall apart. And then, about 15, 20 minutes after I pull the peppers out, when I put the tomatoes in, I sprinkle in crushed red pepper.
Okay.
Just sprinkle a little, because I've taken the pepper part of that, but you need, now I put in a little salt, a little black pepper. And then at the end, it calls for a 1/2 pound of butter. And it calls for 1/2 cup of vinegar.
Uh-huh.
And it's either 1/2 cup or a whole cup of sugar. And a bottle of small Heinz ketchup. And if you can't buy Heinz ketchup, you need to find a ketchup. Hunt's ketchup's got too much vinegar in it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Heinz ketchup does a big to-do about the fact that stuff won't run so fast.
Right.
And you can open Del Monte's and these are just brands that I buy them. There's nothing wrong with them. But the ones that run have got too much vinegar in them or water.
Okay. I didn't talk about that.
And so I always use that little small 12. They still make the little 12-ounce bottle.
Yeah.
And want some coffee?
Yeah.
Would you like some more? I'd love some. Amy does the invitations, and she's got that thing down. I've got some of the invitations I want you to see that she did. Until we started in this music thing, my mother, she says, I don't understand how you can have this many people from these different walks of life come to your house. How do y'all, you know, how do you know they're gonna meld? How do you know they're gonna be able to stand one another? Uh-huh. And I said, well, the underlying thing with the whole group that to come in here spend the night, everybody likes this old time music. Mm-hmm. And everyone that shows up has either met everybody that shows up at least once during the year, and sometimes two or three times during the year, and a bunch of them just through the mails and the computers, email and stuff like that, keeping on going. They passing songs around, and one hears in Kentucky or one hears in Virginia to somebody else, and so it's like an excuse for them to get together and have a jam.
Yeah.
I asked Jim Mintz. He's the one that's coming from Caledonia, Illinois. He said, that sounds like fun. I said, well, why don't you and your wife, why don't you and Jenny come on? He says, well, I believe it will. And so I didn't have any idea. I said, there ain't no way he's going to fly from Illinois down here. And so we sent an invitation, and he sent back. He said, yeah, we're coming in. And I said, but if you're going to fly in, Jim, you really have to come in on Friday. Don't think you're going to start with, I haven't got time to come get you at the airport on Saturday. And so he came, and then we invited a couple of other folks, and they accepted. And so the next year, he was telling everybody, at the first little music camp this crowd usually goes to is in June, and we were all there. And he was telling, so I walked up, and he was telling somebody about it. And the guy said, you didn't invite me. I said, well, if you want to come, I want you to come. And he's come every year. And he and Jim would tell, it's one couple, they are psychiatrists, and they live in Bangor, Maine. And they were one of the, both of them, a husband and wife.
They came all the way from Bangor?
No, they can't come due to their work. But Jim and this other guy were telling them 2 summers ago, and I overheard this, but Jim was saying, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't go but one place in a year, you need to come to this. They worked that vacation schedule where most of the time one would be on vacation and the other one would be working. One of them would come to a music thing, the other one is working because it's a husband-wife business.
Got it.
So when they're both gone, and they do take 10 days off in the middle of the summer. Evidently, things sort of drop off in that industry or that profession. But he said, well, we usually go on vacation. He says, well, if that's the only place you go, you owe it to yourself to go down to Ben and Amos 1 year. And he says, if you ever go, he said, well, just 1 year. He said, because if you go the first time, you're going back. He said, there ain't no way. And the couple, Dave Schomburg and his wife, Ellen, who live in Elkins, West Virginia, they came. Dave likes to go off to these things. Ellen, it was all right to go, but if you're not a dyed-in-the-wool music person, why did you want to go off to where everybody's doing music stuff? And so they came the first year and we invited them. And then the next year, I said, well, Dave, you and Ellen coming to the stew? He says, well, I know I'm coming because Ellen says she's going. And I said, he mentioned to hear her. He said, well, you know, something might come up. She said, might come up for you, but not coming up for me. I'm going to the stew. She said, I can drive down as well as you can. You know, so she really has a good time. It's an outdoor outing. So far, we haven't really had any bad weather that second weekend. Like only once in 30 years has it just poured down rain, and that was after we moved up here. And I hung up big sheets of plastic over the cooking area and stuff like that. And folks could get in the house. We didn't have nowhere near that many people either. But anyway, then you stir in those spices right there at the end.
Uh-huh.
And then from then on, 15 minutes after you put that stuff in, give it time to sort of blend through it, you can either eat it or just keep it warm. And it doesn't take but about the time I do that, I pull all the fire out from under it.
Okay.
And It'll stay hot for hours.
So what time of night is it when it's done?
About somewhere between 5:30 and 6. And then I get that ready and shut that down as far as having to tend to it. Mm-hmm. Once I pull the fire out, if it settles, it's fine, you're stirred up. And then, of course, I got a grill out there, and I'll put 20 chickens on it. And so I'll have 100 quarters of chicken. And then I buy the biggest pig that you can buy, which is like 220 pounds to barbecue. That weighs 204, 208, 200. Last year it weighed 214 pounds. And Walter puts that on. We have that we had a cooker ready with the coals. And this week I'm going to have to cut a hickory tree down, because you want green hickory to make your coals. I got plenty of dry hickory. And I'll start everything with dry hickory. But then when you start to put the pig on, I got a barrel set there with a grate in it that we just keep chunking big chunks of green hickory in, and let it burn all day. And you take a shovel and then you sprinkle and cook it on hickory wood. And he's really responsible. It's his cooker, and it's really responsible for the pig.
He tends to that.
In other words, I'll go over there and help him, and we get ready to turn the pig over. And we put the pig on at 9 o'clock, so at 2 o'clock we turn him over. And we tell those folks that are here, we're going to turn the pig over at 2 o'clock. We tell the people that are coming Saturday afternoon, if you want to be there to pick the ribs, you need to be here. Sometime about 2 o'clock, we turn the pig over. And everybody just sort of stands around the grill and chats and talks and eat all the ribs out of the pig then. That's all like hors d'oeuvres. And then, of course, finish cooking him. And then, so I cook the chickens in halves right down to about the last 30 minutes. And then I quarter them and be sure that the cut parts are down. Yeah. And they ready to come off the bone almost. They cooked. So then the folks are going, and then Amy makes a slaw. Amy will start on Friday. She makes enough homemade pies that she makes 8 homemade pies. 2 apples, 2 blueberries, 2 pumpkins, and 2 pecans. And big, big pie thing. And then she cuts this little pie. And there's enough pie there. You usually have some pie left over. Some people don't eat. And
Most
people will show up by 3 o'clock. Some will start coming early. There's an attorney here in town that comes every year. And he knows when I'm going to turn the pig over.
And
a lot of times he shows up and his family is not here. He goes, usually tries to play golf Saturday morning if the weather's permitting. Then he go by the house. He tells him before he leaves. That's what he tells me. He said, "I'm going to have beans at 2 o'clock. I'm going to turn a pig over, and I'm going to be there." And so he'll go home, and sometimes he shows up in his, just take off his golf shoes, and they'll say, "Well, we're not going to be ready." And last year, I think he called him, or the year before, he called him from the golf course and said, "I'm running late, and I'm going to Ben's. Are y'all ready to go?" And they said, "No." He said, "Well, I ain't coming to get you. In other words, I'm not going to come by there. I'm just going on." So he showed up out here, took his shoes off after he pulled up in the yard. And we had just turned him over. And then he stays and he plays a while. And then he go home and get his family. But it was several like that. When I lived in Fuquay, I did do a pig twice. And my landlord, Dr. Cozart, he's at the hospital. And I always used to do it on Friday in Fuquay. And I would pick a Friday night that it didn't have a high school football game. Yeah. So that the friends would come. Yeah. So he'd say, "Ben, you call the hospital just before you turn that pig over." I said, "Well, Doc, I can't get in touch with you." He said, "Whoever answers the phone, you tell them to go find me and tell them that Ben Avery just called. Don't dare tell them why I'm leaving the hospital. Just tell him." Said, "Ben Avery called and said he wants you to get in touch with him as soon as you can." And so I would call, and some nurse or somebody would answer it at the hospital, a little small hospital there. And they would tell him, and in 5 minutes, he would come over. A lot of times he still won't have on his green stuff that they wear at the hospital when he was there all the time. And he'd come up, and he stood around there one day for about 30 minutes and ate ribs. I said, where you going to eat? I said, Doc, you just reek with barbecue smoke. He said, well, they'll just have to suffer. That's all I know to tell
them. I'm suffering just talking.
He said, they just got to put up with it. So and that's what he would do. He would come. He'd say, whatever he was doing, he'd say, well, I'll be back in 10 or 15 minutes. And for a while, he didn't even tell them. And then it sort of got around where he was going. And one time a visiting doctor said, so I'm going to go with you. He said, well, I don't know where you can go or not. He said, this is an invitation-only thing. And he said, I'd have to ask Ben, and I can't get in touch with him. Yeah. And he said, but if you let me know if you come in next year on this time, whenever we do it, and I'll ask him ahead of time. But Dr. Cozart was he respected people's individuality and privacy, and I really appreciated the way he did that. In all of my doing this, we sent out invitations. But you see, I used to serve everything in little stew trays, plastic form. Amy, it'll be a place set in this house or outdoors or out in that building that she's cleaning. With everybody will eat off plates and bowls and have stainless steel cutware. You know, I mean, it's not any great stuff, but it's stuff you buy at Walmart or Kmart or one of those.
She'll have a table for 100 people.
But she'll have table set for however many people coming. And she makes slaw. In other words, it's some things you make. In other words, you got to have iced tea. We always have iced tea. And the year before Joy died, we were real good friends with Amy and her husband. And we went to Savannah, Georgia, and went into the shrimp factory. And there I discovered artillery punch. You ever had artillery punch?
Huh.
Well, that was after Joy had already been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And they were saying she'd probably have 2 years to live or something like that. And she wanted to tell. And she and Amy's teaching at Harvard at the time. And, of course, George teaching in high school. And Amy was getting all of that teaching that everybody cocks up after she got a doctor's degree in German. And she's teaching at Harvard. It's more politics than it is teaching.
Yeah.
And that part of it, or a lot politics.
Yeah.
And that part of it she wasn't interested in. She wanted to teach.
Right.
And so she and Joy were communicating back and forth about that aspect of it. Same thing in high school and everywhere else you teach these days. So if it's not politics, it's paperwork. You ain't teaching, you're pushing paper.
Right.
So we all met in Savannah, and we stumbled into the shrimp factory, and which is the name of a restaurant and a bar.
Okay.
It's not a factory. I mean, that's the name of the restaurant.
I think it's a shrimp house.
Shrimp factory.
What we call shrimp house.
Right, same thing. But that specialty was Savannah's artillery punch. And it's supposed to have been a story about back during the Revolutionary War. They were having the ladies in town was entertaining these, and they had fixed a punch. And every man who came in out of the military would add whatever he was toting that night to drink to the punch. And it's loaded with, you start with a gallon of homemade strong tea. And to that, you add a gallon of Catawba wine. Now, Catawba wine, the only people that make it now are Richards. But I imagine back when this stuff, that everybody, because that Catawba grape is that little pinkish grape. And they were probably using homemade wine back when this stuff originated. And it basically what it is, it's a wine that resembles the color of tea.
Uh-huh.
It's not white and it's not a blood red.
Right.
And as soon as I saw it, and they said, well, what's Catawba wine? I said, well, it's sort of a rose wine. Well, I've already bought the wine. Richards, who sells wine, really inexpensive wine, to these country stores and everybody up and down the road to sell beer. And the funny thing is, Richards won't sell it in North Carolina. I got to go in Virginia to buy it. But I've already got the wine bought for this year and next year because it's hard to find. They don't sell a lot of it. And so when they do sell it, I have to have five quart, 4 quarts, and those bottles don't hold quite a quart, so it takes 5 bottles of it to come up with a gallon. And so, so you start with that. Then it's the juice of a dozen lemons and the juice of a dozen oranges. And then it's got rye whiskey and vodka and Benedictine and rye whiskey and vodka and gin, a quart of each one of these whiskeys. Pour it in there. And you make this base, according to the recipe, 24 hours before you're going to serve it. And I've got a big, bought especially for it, a big water cooler that's got a spout on it. Holds 10 gallons. That's what the cooler holds. And nothing goes in it but this basic recipe. Don't ever put anything during the year. It just stays in it. Oh, and then, of course, clean it out at the end of the year. But then that sets. And then when you get ready to serve this stuff, the glasses that they serve it in at the restaurant, at the shrimp factory, is a quart brandy sniffer. It's got shrimp factory on it. If you buy the drink, it costs you $5 for the drink, they give you the glass. And knowing that it holds a quart, then I have gone out because I don't have 100. I would love to think I had drank 100 of them, but I didn't. But I buy these inexpensive brandy sniffers, all these glasses at these glass places that hold a quart of liquid. You fill that glass up with ice, crushed ice. And then you fill that glass up half full of punch. And then you fill the top. And you finish filling the glass up with an inexpensive champagne. And then you put in 2 red chers with just a little, usually take a teaspoon, get 2 chers, drop it in there, and whatever juice comes with the chers, and then just stir that around, and then put a straw in it, and then you drink that.
That makes for a festive atmosphere.
Have you ever drank champagne through a straw?
No, I don't think I ever have.
Well, you can take any champagne, and you talking about going to your head right now, you drank it through a straw.
Yeah.
Well, you drank this concoction.
That kind of does that for me anyway, even without a straw.
Well, I've had people who would show up. We set that up on a table by itself. Now everybody knows about it. But early on, when I first started using this, which was 7 years ago, a lot of folks didn't. I just didn't bother. I mean, everybody's talking about it and something new. But some people got over that stuff who don't drink. And it was one woman who I knew, and I saw her. I said, wait a minute. I said, you know what's in that? And she says, well, fruit juice. I said, that's one of the things that's in it. And I said, but it's wine and 4 different kinds of liquor. She says, not in this. It don't taste like it. I said, let me tell you something. Now, that'll go to your head in a minute. And she said, well, I'll just sip on it. It was hot October day. And it's a real refreshing drink. And you can drink one, and you in good shape, because you're going to be here 4 hours, and you're going to eat all that beef. You go past one, you either better be somebody who can hold his liquor,
yeah,
or you in trouble. We had one boy here. He's my fourth cousin, and he never had drank it. And he had 3 in about 40 minutes. And he was standing there, and he was telling this other guy who had had it before, this first time this guy had ever had it. And he said, this stuff on you, it ain't got any kick to it at all. And he was standing there rocking on his feet, leaning back. Yeah. And Dave said, Ernie, how many of them you had? He said, 3. This is my 3rd one. He said, have you tried to walk? He said, well, I had to walk over there to get it. I mean, have you had to walk in the last 3 or 4 minutes? He said, you don't realize it, but you stand there swaying back and forth like a big tree. Ernie said, nah, it ain't bothering me. So anyway, he was fine. But at 2 o'clock that morning, he said, Ben, I got to go. I got to check my sweet potatoes. He raised big sweet potatoes, and it had gotten cool. And he'd be shooting, had them in a barn, cured them, commercial. He went out, got in the truck, and left. Well, his wife had driven with him, and she'd had a couple of drinks, you know, and she's a nurse, and so she's a few minutes later. Well, many left at 2 o'clock in the morning. But she said, Ben, where's Ernie? I said, Phyllis, he left here about 15, 20 minutes ago. She says, well, I told him I had to ride home with him, that I had too much to drink. And I said, well, Phyllis, evidently, if Ernie has forgotten you, he had too much to drink. I said, well, don't worry about it. Amy and I'll carry you home. So the crowd sort of broke up anyway. It was breaking up anyway. So I said, all right, Phyllis, we can carry you home now. So Amy and I got in the car and carried her home about 5 miles out in the country. And the house was dark. And she said, you rang something happened to him? And I said, dog. I said, I don't know. He said he was coming down here to check them sweet potatoes. And she says, well, maybe he's still down there. So anyway, so we went in. The door was locked. And it had the deadbolt on it, which was different. And her key, she said, well, what? So she rang the bell just to see if he was there. And lights came on. He came to the front door. He said, what are you doing in my front door at 2 o'clock in the morning, Ben? I said, I brought your wife home, Ernie. Well, what are you doing out with my wife anyway? Phyllis said, good night, Ben. Good night, Amy. Come on, Ernie. Let's go back in the house. We're going back in the house. And I worried him to death about that. He swore up and down and none of that happened.
I bet Phyllis did too.
And Phyllis gave him the hardest time about that. That was a funny thing. But that's how potent that stuff is. Ooh. But if it's little warm, with all that beef, all that pork, it really goes good with the festivities.
Sounds just right.
So that's, and like I say, the crowd that comes in here, stay. Amy on Friday night fixes, two or three trays, great big things of vegetable lasagna. I tell her, I said, this is the last vegetable you're going to see now for the next 24 hours. There won't be any more vegetables. She's already made the pies. We set up the picnic tables outside. And last year, it was 18 here Friday night. And we just have a big thing of vegetables on you and a big bowl of slaw. And everybody sits around and gets in, chats and tells about last year's and what to do and all that kind of stuff. Then we sit around and play music till 2 or 3 o'clock. In fact, last year's 3 o'clock. I said, ain't worth 5 cents for me to go to bed. I got to get up 5 o'clock, start these fires. But I said, well, I'll go on in the house anyway. And I set the clock, but I was waiting before the clock went off when that dance started everything. And then Amy gets up, and of course, when I do, be sure I got everything going and the fire going. And then about 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, everything going is going. Fire's going. Wally's got the pig on. Folks are starting to get up and just move around. And I go out there, and I got a pretty nice cooking setup out there. So I start frying country sausage. And Amy starts making biscuits. And so everybody gets sausage biscuits that wants them for breakfast. Anybody that wants them. Or they can have donuts or muffins or whatever else she's fixed. Or cereal and stuff. Or those that want them for sausage biscuits. Because that's the last thing they're going to eat until dinner.
It's worth waiting.
You know. And then Amy fixes, like I said, she fixes a big thing of homemade pimento cheese. And we get those goldfish, and folks start standing around about 4 o'clock and having a drink, cold drink or a beer, whatever you want. And it's punchy if you want to start that early. And sort of standing around, the crowd sort of come in and everybody. Then you got some people that play this music that live here in the county, and some live in Durham, and some live in Raleigh. And, you know, so they just drive in. One comes from Winston-Salem, that sort of stuff. They just drive up. And
is that who most of the people are now that come in?
It's mostly the musicians? Mostly. It's narrowed down here. Walter Turner and his brother, my brother and his family, which is two girls and half husbands and children, Dan. Tom Great Curran, who's an attorney in town. His brother, Tom plays music. His brother Tom plays about anything you want to. So can Tim Curran, who is younger brother. But his younger brother really is an old-time music activist. And he don't want you to talk to him about bluegrass or country music. And you ask him if you know Orange Blossom Special, which is a good bluegrass, he said he can't play it. He said, Tennessee, you play orange? He said, I don't know how. He literally won't play bluegrass music. You can't get him to play bluegrass music.
What's he play?
Plays old time music.
He plays it.
Old time music is the traditional song that bluegrass
came out of. Way back.
And, well, that ain't been that long ago. Bill Monroe, back in the 50s, was really considered the father of bluegrass music.
Yeah.
And he really was country music before he was.
Right.
I remember seeing him in Raleigh or hearing about him. I didn't go, but when I was in the early 50s, when I was in high school, I had a couple of these country music dance hall type things. We had one in Raleigh out there in South Raleigh.
Yeah.
And I remember Bill Monroe was featured, you know, he'd come. And he was smart enough to realize, I mean, he didn't want to play. That was about time Elvis was getting going. He didn't want to play rock. But people were not going to sit and listen to old-time music. They wanted more speed to it. And he'd do a thing in the world but just rewrite so many of the old-time songs.
I don't know if this has anything to do with this, but what's the difference between old-time music and the...
And bluegrass.
Like bluegrass.
Well, I'm not a musician, but basically, from a listener standpoint, it's this. On old-time, we'll take Liza Jane, that's played like it was written old-time music. And it has, for the fiddle, a lot of, not a whole lot, but a lot of phrases in it. Chords, not for chords, but phrases. But for backup on the guitar, it's just three notes. And that's a whole lot of A's with one G thrown in every once in a while and two E's. And you just play the same thing. And they play it, sometimes it'll run for 30 minutes. Well, if you took that song and played it bluegrass, and the way an old-time music is, you got A part and a B part. You play the A part twice and the B part twice, and you played the song. Well, then they jump back and play the A part twice and the B part twice, the A part twice. And that's the way it goes over and over and over. And you hear a lot of folks say, I just want to play the same song for 20 minutes. And it's great for dancing.
Yeah.
Old-time music is great for dancers because the caller, it's a pattern now.
Right.
And he knows the song and he knows what he's going to call, so he can tune time his calls to what the band is doing with that song. But if you were playing bluegrass, you'd play the first part twice and the second part twice, and you go back to the A part, you would improvise something. You would still be within the structure of the song, but from a musical standpoint, but you would do something entirely different to it.
So speaking of people that I might recognize, like if you talk about old-time music, like Carter Sisters?
Carter Sisters, over the years, that's old-time, which borders on country, and they have a lot of old-time songs. But the Carter family.
Now, I mean like Maybell
and that crowd. They added their touch to it.
But basically we're talking
that. You're talking old-time music.
That would be,
okay. That's old-time music. You'd be hard-pressed. People would run you out of a music hall if you took a Carter family song and tried to bluegrass it. Because they did it and live with it.
Yeah. Or I don't remember musicians very well, but Wreck on the Highway.
Right.
Some of those, that's what we're talking here, is that kind of generation of songs.
And you see, in the Carter family, which is right up here in Galax, Virginia, they have...
Are they from here?
Yeah, they're Galax, Virginia.
I didn't know that.
And they still have, not far from Galax, every Friday night, a group that'll show up, and that's basically what they play, is Carter family tunes.
How about that?
And you mess with a Carter family tune in that area of the country, and they've... That tell you right off, you come to the wrong place to do this, son, man. Because they did what they did and had such a big following that they became an icon in other words. This is Carter family. You have people singing,
kind of music, okay.
You know, singing. Right. This is Carter family songs. And and there's the books and books and books that Maybell and that crowd wrote.
Right.
That's really in its purest form. And it's nothing wrong. If you want to sing Carter Family, you play it like they played it. You don't change it.
Mess with it. Right.
You don't mess with it. I mean, you don't want to mess with it.
Right.
Okay. So that's where that is. And
the kind of music y'all play when you get together.
There are a few Carter Family songs, but they not many.
Is it old time music?
It's old time music.
Y'all don't do the bluegrass.
Kind of thing. That's a few songs that. Hey. Hold on a second. Yeah. I got a 67 Thunderbird out here. That was Amy's grandmother's, that her mother had, that her mother gave me. It's got those suicide doors on it.
Yeah.
And we parked it out there, and the dogs are looking out the window. And it says, get here any way you can, but then get here. But that's basically the history of it.
Yeah.
And going back to like we touched on square one, there, within the next month, every volunteer fire department and so many of the churches in the area, just immediate area, and I got to do it all over.
Right.
I noticed in the paper today that one of the little towns had a pig picking.
Yeah.
To raise money.
Yeah.
And these churches are going to do pig pickings, they're going to do barbecue chicken, and they're going to do stew.
Yeah.
And they cook stew from some particular recipe. But you start serving stew at 11 o'clock in the morning, and you didn't start it till 6 o'clock in the morning, then you've done a lot of pre-cooking.
Right.
And it just, and it's nothing, it's better, you certainly can't buy it canned. Cans to you. This is awful nice of you.
Did you find all these?
Yeah, I couldn't find the best one. That which is that one.
Which one?
The one of them on the pot.
Okay.
Amy came up with this idea. That's the best rest. That's the, I think that's rakes with the top. I took dries.
Did you say squirt?
And put it in the in a bucket and put it in that.
And they can look at.
And no, and then I right where that pot sits.
Yeah.
I lined it with just a little bit of canned dog food. So they came to see to lick the dog food. And then we took picture after picture after picture so that we would catch them as soon as they looked up. And it would look like they were looking in that pot. And you'd be surprised the people who try to figure out. Now, how did you pose that? Did you? And that's a good picture of that stainless steel barrel, see?
Yeah, I was interested.
That shows that.
I was really interested.
But that's about it. This is just on a sundry of pictures we put together for the 30th.
Ben, do you have any more to tell me? I got some more questions for you.
Go ahead.
I've been pretty much just listening.
Yeah.
And I got a good story already.
Okay, but, no problem.
Is there anything else?
I think that's pretty much it. All this is it gives you, we would take pictures, and in a couple of years we would not take pictures. Here's a recipe in here for that artillery punch that they give you when you buy it. Here's the recipe for the stew. And...
there's Tyson, I'd recognize him.
Yeah, he ain't changed a bit.
I don't need to see his face.
I ain't seen him fooling. He used to come. When he was in Atlanta going to school, he used to come every year. And when he got up to Madison, he hadn't come since. I realize because he's working and doing his thing and his family and the children and stuff. And
you keep sending him invitations.
But, well, I'll tell you what we're doing is invitations. We send invitations 3 years. If we don't hear from you, we take you off the list.
That's what I do with my green tomato. I don't do much canning, but I have a extreme fondness for green tomato pickles.
Oh man, I love them.
At the end of the year, I just go into whatever's left. Sometimes I can't even wait for the first frost. I used to wait for the first frost, and the night before I'd go pick them. Now sometimes I just love them so much. Miss Beatty, my 99-year-old neighbor, it's her recipe. She learned it from her mama when she was little, so I don't know how far it goes back. But that's what I do. If I give them away, and I'll give them 2 years, and if I visit their house and I see them up there,
they have eaten them.
Or in the back of the refrigerator.
They don't give.
That's it. I put too much time into it. It takes all day to make those.
Well, if I give you some green tomatoes, can I get a jar of pickle?
I already got some for you.
My mother.
I made them last weekend.
My daddy asked my mother back in the late 30s. He says, why don't you make green tomato pickle? And they concocted some recipe. Just onion, and it were, but onions and green tomatoes and pickling spice and vinegar and sugar. That's all it is to it. I've got the recipe, but I don't ever make the green tomato pickle, so I'm so crazy. But I have given two people green tomatoes this year out of my garden. I plant 150 green tomato slip. Because I love tomatoes.
Well, next year, you supply me. I'll be sure you get a lot more. But I got a little quart jar for you already.
If it won't pour down rain,
I only make them once a year. I'm not going to do it
again. Oh, you're not going to do it again?
No, I did it last weekend.
Well, I can give you a peck of green tomatoes today. We mop out of our net. You got on the boots, so I give you a basket.
Yeah.
And you go down and pick as many as you want. Because they ain't going to. What's this? This is going to make over 15 inches of rain that we've had.
I love to do it. I love to do it. And I don't know if you may not like.